I'm Cape.
And I'm Drew.
We're just two former student athletes who understand the game.
Not just on the court.
But in life.
At the end of the day, we just want to help.
Today's athletes and former just trying to find their way.
It's bigger than sports.
This is the Cape and Drew Podcast, the real TikTok. What's up, everybody? I'm Cape.
I'm Drew.
Today, we are back. It's been a minute. We got a very, very special guest, good friend, known this guy for like 20-plus years. We in a group text. We talk all day. We just started running together virtually or competing on this Nike app. One of the smartest dudes I know. Talk sports, politics, whatever have you. You know, I got to tell a quick story, but I'm going to introduce him first. Lawrence, say what's up.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Okay. Now, I got to tell a quick story because it's important for the viewers to know this is the only person that ever in high school where I had a starting, when I had the starting position, that took my starting position. Okay, Smalls is laughing because he knows the story I'm about to tell. Drew, I don't even know if you know the story. So
I do know it too.
You know the story? Okay, I'm gonna tell the story. All right, this is my version of the story, okay? So It's my junior year, it's Smalls' senior year, and you know, we had this little point system in practice. You know, I think we might have been having a losing streak or whatever, and so our high school coach started this plus minus system or something in practice. You know, I don't know what he was talking about, but anyway, you know, if you got deflections or, you know, rebounds or whatever the case, man, or if you took charges, you got points, right? Well, I weighed 175 pounds in high school, and I took two charges my entire life. One was in AAU and one was in junior high. And both times, I fell on my tailbone, and I was out for 2 or 3 days, right? So by the time I got to high school, I said, I ain't taking no charges. So anyway, Smalls is in practice taking charges on everything. Like Marcus Smart style. Just, So anyway, he gets like positive plus, I don't know, I'm in the negative, you know, because I'm just trying to score. You know, you don't get no points for that, right? So next game, Small starts in my position, right? So my dad is so funny. I can't demonstrate because obviously we're virtual, but my dad is so pissed. Like I look at my dad in the stands, and even to this day, when we all get together, when me, Small, Josh, and Solomon get together, my dad is in the stands because the game is starting. I'm sitting on the bench. My dad said, hey, coach. Oh, shit, and so we ended up winning that game. I think the next game I didn't start either, but I think I came in and had 30. But anyway, that's my version of the story.
Went crazy. You went crazy.
I did go crazy because I was trying to prove a point. I was pissed, but you did deserve a start. I mean, I wasn't a defensive guy, but you know, it's all good. But anyway, man, you doing all right today?
I'm doing all right. Just one caveat to that story. I was probably our best defender. Just okay. Put it out there.
Hey, you were our best defender, but this is our show, okay? So anyway. Hey, but anyway, man, thanks for being on the show, man. This is a long time coming. I know we talked about it for a while now, but it's great to have you on the show.
Hey, man. So you know, the first question we always ask people, man, is just how you been doing, you know, during the whole COVID-19 pandemic, right? And then kind of. What's been, if there is any, the best part about being in quarantine and what's kind of been the worst part about it?
Well, to be honest, you know, COVID's been tough, but, you know, my kids are straight. My immediate family, my wife, none of us have been affected. I've had a frat brother I lost to it. That was kind of difficult. And, you know, I lost a second cousin. But as far as my immediate family, we've been blessed. So I have to say that overall for us, you know, we've still been able to work, me and my wife. And in a weird way, because everybody's not in that situation, COVID actually has been a blessing for my family. It allowed me to kind of slow down life, really focus on my wife and kids, and, you know, focus on my mental and spiritual and physical health, to be honest. Since COVID, you know, a lot of people have been stressed. I've been doing more praying, more reading, running with you guys in this Nike run out. You know, I've lost 25 pounds, so I'm trying to wear all spandex shirts moving forward, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, being facetious, but, you know, those are things that's been healthy. You know, eating healthy, eating real meals opposed to cooking out. I mean, you know, drive-through food. It's been a blessing. The worst part of COVID is not, like I said, not my family, but just seeing the impact it's having on the community, friends. You know, a lot of people have struggled with mental health issues. So you always got to pray for, you know, people in that situation. And also the kids. There's a lot of kids who really depend on school, and me being an educator, that's probably the toughest part, not being there for them. So I know that school, whether kids love school or not, coming and being social is an outlet. Yeah. And it's good for their mental health in any capacity. And I think that's the toughest part, just looking at the community.
Yeah, I saw something that was interesting. I think it was on the Today Show or something. They were talking about, you know, people don't understand, like, school is some kids get away from their home situation, whether it's an abusive parent or just, mm-hmm. you know, a crazy yeah. uncle or whatever the home environment is. And we don't, you know, I don't think about that. You know what I'm saying? I because I didn't grow up like that. But, you know, those 6 hours or whatever you're in school sometimes is the highlight of your day or the only time you might get a meal, which is crazy yeah. to think about. So, you know, and just.
But kudos to come with that, though. We are feeding our kids and doing extra stuff. So kudos to that.
Well, that's good. And one of the things I forgot to mention in your introduction, I know we're going to get to it, is that, I mean, you're the athletic director at our alma mater now, at our high school. Which is crazy because, you know, I told me and Drew was texting and you know, Drew was like, oh, I didn't realize he was an AD. He thought you were just the vice of, or the assistant principal. I was like, no, he's been an AD, but now you're at our high school. Can you talk about our old high school? Can you talk about just your career path? Like, you know, how long have you been in education? How long have you been mm-hmm. an AD, and what made you want to be an AD?
Well, so I've been in education 16 years, right out of, you know, graduating college, going on 17. I've been an AD for 6 of them. And to be honest, you know, I was a coach, and I thought I was going to, you know, get a championship. I thought I was going to be a championship Hall of Fame coach, to be honest with you. And I kind of fell into AD. I was doing a lot of stuff in my old high school. State of North Carolina was like, hey, we want you to be an administrator. And to be honest, I was like, no, I'm cool. I'm a coach. I'm going to get these chips, you know. And I was engaged at the time, and my parents were like, are you crazy? You better take this free money and get that license. You know, because you'll never get it free. So I went ahead and went through the program. I was blessed to get a job right when I completed it. They were like, we're going to put you at E.E. Smith. And I just worked hard. And because, you know, you meet coaches when you're competing against them, and you already have the rapport because you know all the coaches in the county. So one day it was like, hey, look, we want you to be the athletic director, which was something that I thought about, you know, but I wasn't like necessarily have to do that. You know what I mean? I was like, well, I'll help out anyway. I don't have to be AD. I just love athletics. You know, all the athletes I was cool with. But they were like, just go ahead and make that change. And it's been a blessing. I love being around athletics. I love working with student athletes and helping them out because I was a student athlete. And I know athletics really helped me. So to give back in that capacity is great. And I know you mentioned that I'm back at our alma mater. It's amazing, man. Just going back to a high school you loved and you graduated from, being on the other side of school, believe it or not, looks completely different, you know? But, you know, I'm an AD there, know some of the old coaches that were coached when we were in high school are still in the system. So we got big things planned for Palm Forest High School, and I just hope you guys continue to support. I know you guys will, so
yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, real quick, Drew. So, you know, you remember I used to work there. You know, I was the ISS guy there. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
assistant coach years ago now. But to your point, it is weird going back to your old mm-hmm. high school as an adult. Like, things are so much smaller because I remember thinking that high school was so big. And I remember walking. Yeah. I don't know if you've done this yet, but, you know, you walk the halls And you like, yo, mm-hmm. Like the pond where we used to all hang out right there. You like, yo, I used to kick it right there all the time. So I know
you say why it's weird for me hearing Smalls talk about this, because I remember when I first met Smalls. And I remember
where was it?
I met his brother first.
Oh, Thurston.
And so you're like, I was like, you do what? So it was just, it's just crazy to see, you know, how we all kind of have grown up. And right, and now you kind of things that we love. But now, was there ever a point where you were kind of out of school and you working where you were like, you actually wanted to be the athletic director? Or was it kind of just like, it just kind of flowed like you just said? Or was it like, you start looking at it, like, okay, I can really have an impact here?
Yeah. I would say it more so flowed, because my whole thing is I wanted to be a coach, you know, a basketball coach. And I always dreamt I was going to win a state title and, you know, watch a kid play in the NBA finals. That was my goal, you know, be that kind of coach, you know. And but I think once I went through administration and my, you know, I had two principals who really wanted me to go in administration. So after the second one was really pushing and it was free money, and then I went into it, then that's when I started looking at the athletic director a little bit more serious. And and then it happened, you know. And like I said, it's a blessing. I know, you know, that God is good. You know, I just prayed for, you know, to work at a place and work at jobs that I enjoy. And the Lord granted me, I believe, that athletic director position, because it just made school and being an administrator that much more fun. So,
yeah,
kind of fell into.
Drew always says, you know, it pays not to be a jerk. You know what I'm saying?
And true.
I think that's part of it, too, because, I mean, you know, we grew up there, and obviously you and mm-hmm. your wife were kind of well-known. Y'all both in education. And I feel like mm-hmm. low-key, y'all are like, I don't want to put too much on you, but y'all are low-key like the Obamas around there, man. Like,
I'd love to hear that.
I mean, I feel like between you and your mm-hmm. wife, I feel like, you know, Fayetteville is a small, small town, but I feel like because of y'all's reputation, I mean, that's why you and her have been blessed, like, because y'all's reputation, like, y'all are nice, you're smart, you know, they mm-hmm. people can invite you anywhere, and, you know, they know how you're going to act, you know what I mean? You play the game well. So, you know, that's cool that y'all are doing that, and y'all still young. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But what was the biggest challenge you faced as you moved your way up through education and athletics?
I think the biggest challenge I face is, you know, Julia's known me forever. I really love people, and I love hard. So I love kids. And I think the biggest challenge I face sometimes, and it's not much, but it's just a small minority of educators, sometimes they think it's about them. Mm. And that really burns me up. It's never about me. It's never about what's comfortable for me. I'm grown. I'm settled. I have a family. And it's really about these young people we're molding. So the most difficult part sometimes is getting adults out there feeling and just really focused on, well, what's best for this child. Because sometimes what's best for the kid, whether it's an athlete or, you know, the SGA president. You know, I work with all kids, not just athletes. So whatever best for that child is what we need to do. And sometimes that may cause you to work a little later, have an extra tutor time, but we have to get it done.
Yeah. And I think me and Drew can attest to that, even in higher education. I mean,
yeah.
I always tell people the job when it comes to students is easy. It's the other adults in the room that's kind of
correct.
It's kind of difficult. You know? Once you're able to manage that, and especially in your role when you're managing so many people, grown people.
Sometimes. Yeah.
It could be challenging, but so can you discuss some of the innovative ways and strategies that you found to be successful in athletics? You mentioned just working with the student athletes, but can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, innovation, you know, that's I guess it's kind of tough, but it's not. Like, I think the best way to work with athletes and kids in general is just build that relationship and know where they are, you know? Now, there's innovation, like right now during COVID, we have virtual workouts. We started that. I had athletic town halls for the kids to build that rapport. We've had virtual workouts where we're still drawing up plays wow. and trying to have you do drills, and we watch. So those innovation, that's really just being comfortable to say, you know what, this is where we are. We can't meet face-to-face right now, but we have technology. How can we do some things to keep our kids engaged, you know?
Yeah.
And then innovation, I guess it depends on what you define as innovation, because I know with us, we haven't seen our kids in a while. So we bought postcards, and all of us coaches handwritten notes, messages on the postcards and emailed it out. And I was shocked at the many people that was like, wow, that was innovative, that was great. You emailed your kids postcards. Most kids never get a postcard. Most people haven't got a postcard in forever with the use of internet or whatever, but it made the athletes feel good. And it was not that it was innovative. We're trying to be ahead of the curve. We just want to use the tools we have and to make you feel well, to make you feel confident, let you know we're thinking about you. And when you're working in athletics and you're doing a team, that's what it's about. Knowing yeah. that your teammates care and that people care about you and want you to feel good. And yeah. I'm part of your team. You know, I'm the AD. Now, I talk to your coaches and all that. But at the end of the day, we're one team. Mm-hmm. You know, we're one athletic group. And whatever I got to do to really build that relationship is what it's going to be, whether it's old school postcards that we handwrite or virtual workouts, we're going to get it done.
Yeah, and that's cool. And I think that's almost how you have to be right now, just be flexible. But
yeah.
Let me ask you this, though, is have you seen a change in the students or even the student athletes from when you first got into being an AD or when you first got into education compared to now? Is there any difference in the student athlete?
Huge difference. And it's a huge difference from when I first started coaching in 2004 yeah. till now. And I would say that it's not just athletes specifically. I think it's maybe just people in general and it affects athletes, but they're a little bit more me.
Mm.
I think when I first started coaching, it was almost understood I got to sacrifice for my team. Mm-hmm. You know, as a coach, you don't have to take time to explain that. It was almost automatic. I'm the coach. We're going to sacrifice to get this dub. You know, so if I ask you to do X, Y, Z, you're going to get it. And we're going to be good. Now players are like, what's in it for me? And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, you know, because everything's on a spectrum.
Right.
But I do tell the coaches, and we got to adapt. Like, these kids are new now. Parents are new now. Mm. You got to explain that first. It might be an extra 5 or 10 minutes, but I got to look at Drew and say, hey, Drew, this is what's in it for you. It's why you do it for you. So we can go ahead and get this win. Back in the day, I had that
conversation with my class yesterday, man. It was like, man, we paying all this money. I should be able to do what I want in my room. And I was like, real quick, it's, I understand that, but it's about the greater good of the community, right? I know you're in policy and rules. It's like, don't you got to explain that, because now they just hear rules. They're like, nah, man, you need to tell me why. And it's like,
tell me why. And it's the same with the parent. Same thing with parents. You know, my dad, I say he probably talked to my track coach, football, and basketball coach maybe one time. And I'm just saying that because I don't want to be a liar. I don't remember a time, right. But I'm assuming he may have did it. Now, you got to be prepared to speak to the parents as well. Why? You know, because they're hovering. They're hovering. And really, you know, parents, I used to call them, you know, they used to be out of it. Then they became helicopter parents. Midway through my coaching, they were just hovering around, just looking over your shoulder, questioning everything. Now, as an AD, I'm dealing with bulldozer parents.
Mm.
And they're just trying to smash every obstacle out their child's way to make it as clear as possible. And I got to explain that adversity and some of the things that we all learn playing sports, also life skills. You know, so it's been a change, but also I think of society. And you can look at society now. You know, we got to debate, why do I have to wear a mask for you? You know? So
we definitely want to. Part two, man.
Oh, So sad, dog. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but y'all, you know how I feel. I've talked to both of y'all about how I feel about all of this. So, well, let's just carry on.
Yeah.
So we start the reopening process, right? So what goes through your mind when trying to navigate safety, sports, possible revenue impact and those sorts of things?
Well, a lot goes through my mind, and that's probably the more difficult aspect of this return. I'm actually on the state board, Ag Health Committee for the North Carolina High Schools Athletic Association. And, we're all, it's us and a couple of people across the state. We're trying to get these counties straight and figure out how to play. And I think the toughest part is trying to figure out how to do that safely, And I wrestled with that because, to your point, Drew, revenue came up. I had to speak on revenue with some of my coaches and, some of the other ADs in my district. But my whole thing is we're high school athletics. And I think college to a degree, we can't worry about revenue. Yes, take revenue out the pot because we're never going to make up what we lost because of COVID. Can't do it. Safety is priority. And the worst thing I could do is make, I have small budgets. My budget is $80,000. That's not worth a kid getting sick or maybe having repercussions that affect them well into their 40s. Know what I mean? So looking at data showing enlarged hearts and stuff. So every time I speak, people try to go into money. Now let the big kids just give us money or what can we do to reduce the cost of what things will cost to play. But that's at the end. Safety needs to be a priority. And if we can't figure that out, then we need to wait. But the North Carolina High School Athletic Association with the state governor and the medical team, I think we have a good plan in place. But, revenue, I'll worry about that bridge when I get there because I don't never want money to cloud my mind, and it easily can. Let me put it up.
What blew me, man, so the Big Ten, I thought the Big Ten did it right. They was like, we just not going to do it. We just can't, man. We don't got enough. The science there is da-da-da-da. Instead, people was all like, no. You got to explain why y'all not going to play rather than saying that to the schools and the conference that are playing. it was like, I would be like, if y'all put my kid out there, I would be like, I need a little bit more detail. But they was like picketing and it was like, I lost the words, but it's just like, now, of course, the Big Ten, they voted unanimously. They're going to start playing again. But I'm like, man.
Did they? I didn't even see that. Did they?
Yeah. They voted to play, and I'm gonna be honest with you. When we got to look at revenue that sports generate, even high school and especially college, when I saw the report that LSU was behind $80 million this year if they don't have the football season, that was mind blowing to me because football. I wouldn't imagine in a normal education setting, athletics should affect our operation. Mm-hmm. To me, I look at athletics as icing or the cherry on top, not part of our operation budgets. And I even look at a school that, my brother went to, Chapel Hill, they had to cut salaries and stuff based off of their money. And that was just wild to me. I just feel like athletics has morphed into something that we have to be careful that it is. I'm weary of how much money it makes and how it's looked at as we need this money. It is a business. Because the further we get to the business model, I do worry about how effective we can truly be with our athletes.
The bottom line is this, though. I mean, there is so much money in college athletics, particularly football, because of the TV deals and whatnot. And of course, the stadium, I think Alabama's stadium seats over 100,000 or LSU. I know the school I work at is over 80,000. So, and then the TV contracts. But here's what I'll say, though, is that I commend the student athletes, especially the football guys, that are like, I'm going to sit this one out, champ, and I'm just going to prepare for the NFL draft. Now, They've done enough legwork their freshman, sophomore year, or their junior year. Now they have positioned themselves to do that, and we'll see. Only time will tell what you know how it affects their draft. But I'm just like, yo, if it's my kid, I'm just trying to imagine like my kid playing for a college, and they're not giving you any information on how they're going to protect his health. They're just saying, you know, they're going to be tested. Well, I was joking with Drew the other day. I said, I truly believe they're not going to give us the numbers, the data, the correct data of positive cases when it comes to these student athletes, because the NBA is working great because they're confined. They're in a bubble. They ain't going nowhere. They sent Buddy from Houston, get out of here. Get out of here. They're not playing no games, but you can't create that kind of space for student athletes because they're in college. College is wild, man. You're going to be doing stuff. So, I mean, y'all are right. And look, God forbid, and I said this on the show before, God forbid something happens to one of these kids and it's life-threatening and they got a pre-existing whatever and then they catch it because they were out there. But it's tough, but it's a lot of money. I wish more people thought like you and said, you know, they're not worried about the money. But you dealing with 80 grand, they dealing with 80 million. it's a different ball game.
It is a different ball game, and it's dangerous. And I will say this, you know, while speaking with colleagues, you know, they're like, well, Smalls, you don't want the kids to play. You don't. No, I do care, you know. But when the problem I have is when you're safe and you're cautious, such as what North Carolina has been for the most of the pandemic, people are saying it's not that bad, you know, and want to rush back. My whole thinking, it's not that bad because we were safe. We could easily be like some of the neighboring states, but North Carolina is surrounded by states with big issues, but we have been the safest out of that. And that's one thing I try to tell some of the ADs I work with, like, hey, look, we're safe now. That's because what we are doing works, but it's hard to see what you prevent. You know what I mean? It's hard to see that. People can see when you mess up, but it's hard to see when you're doing good and it's working right. And I said, we got to keep that in mind.
So, yeah. It's a tough spot to be in. Hopefully, we'll see. I am looking forward to March Madness. Hopefully, you know, I don't care too much about football anyway, so we'll see what happens. I know you personally. I know you got a great relationship with students. Can you talk about how you build those relationships with this younger generation? Because, I mean, me and Drew talk about this all the time. We getting older. They seem to be getting younger. Like some of these kids, these freshmen. Yeah. In college right now are half my age. So how do you stay connected? How do you build these relationships?
I think the best way to build relationships is to listen. Because a mentor once told me that, you know, kids haven't changed. It's just the method how you deal with them. So when he told me that, it made perfect sense when I first became an educator. Like, when I was in high school, I knew a teacher was rapping a Biggie Small songs and knew the lyrics. You know how you talking to your boys and they finish it? I'm like, oh, snap, they cool. Same thing today. You know, I had to listen to Roddy Ricch a little bit. You know, I had to get that CD. You know, when I let kids know I know a little bit about it, I'm not, you know, rapping all the lyrics. I just got to let them know I know. You know, I can talk a little something. I'm into what you into. It helps build that rapport because it's like I care what you care, you know? Mm-hmm. Talking some of that lingo, being knowledgeable of some of the social media, you know? Kids are always on it, and I know educators that are older than me, they'll say, all you want to do is be on social media. Well, back in the day, people weren't talking. They're looking at a newspaper. Mm-hmm. They're not talking. These kids are just reading something on their phone, not talking. It's really the same if you think about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the content might be a little different, a little bit more explicit, but it's the same thing. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
It's the same thing. Yeah. Don't say that's just not distant and they don't want to be. Just go ahead and engage them. And like I said, there's some problems with it, but knowing where they're coming from, I can engage them personally. That's how you build the rapport. Because at the end of the day, whether it's, you know, the 1800s, early 2000s, you know, people want to know that you know about what they're interested in and that you care. And, you know, that's how I do it. And people ask me, well, Smalls, why do the kids love you? Because when I'm in the lunchroom, I love lunch duty. The average person hates monitoring the lunchroom. I love it. I don't have fights when I'm in the lunchroom, Ron, because on any random day, I'm going to plop down at your seat, especially a group of boys. You know what I mean? I'm more personable with the boys. I'm a man. Hey, man, you see that game last night?
Nope.
Now we talking junk, you know?
Tensions are easy.
Tensions are easy down now. No?
Yeah. You know? Hey, that almost backfired me, how... man.
Oh, it did?
I was listening to Pandora in my football, like, as the kids coming to my class, so I had like music playing. Mm-hmm. Song came on, WAP came on, man. Like, oh. Somebody say like, why you change it? I was like, ah, that's a little that today.
There's no clean version of WAP on Pandora.
No clean version. iTunes guys, so I pre-make a playlist, or sometimes a song like WAP, I'll just play the instrumental. I haven't yet because the kids aren't together.
Yeah.
But I'll pull stuff like that just to let them know, like, Mr. Smalls, what's that?
Yeah.
You know what it is. Yeah. They don't sit down. Yeah. Now I'm cool. I got a couple of points. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, I think it's important to, I mean, we talk about all the time too about having more male figures in education. But then if you, mm-hmm. you know, if you black and, yeah. And a male, and then, you know, you need more color, people of color in general. But to that point about, like, sitting in the lounge room going to people like, yo, you see the Celtics game last night? People don't understand. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people misunderstand how, when you're a kid, you think about when we was in high school, we would see the principal or the AD or a teacher. You just you don't even look at them like they're human beings. You just think they're robots, right? You don't think they have a life. You know, they just come mm-hmm. here and go to work and they're corny or whatever. And then, like you said, you might hear, you might see somebody pull up you in the driveway or something in the parking lot at the school. Like, yo, is he listening to Jay-Z? Yo, Mr. Smalls, Mr. Johnson, what's good? Or, and I know both of y'all have done this too, you get out there and hoop with the students. And they like, see, that was always my angle. That was always my angle is I'm like, all right, they think I'm corny, you know, whatever. I get out there in the murals, get you on that island, baby, especially when I was in my 20s. Now, not so much, though, not right now, but, you know, but that's how you build that relationship, though. You get out there, talk a little trash, they get you, you get them right back, you know. Next thing you know, they're in your office, and now you're talking about college, you're talking about majors, you're talking about student health services, whatever the case may be. And, that's what we need more of, man, because you know how it is. You in high school, man, you be looking at people like, yo, they whack, they corny, they ain't got no life.
They don't have no life. And it's funny because these kids, you know, I'm working in high school kids, they're 17. And to echo your point, you know, on the weekends, you know, I don't always see who's right around me. So I'm pulling up for the TLC. You know, I got my music going. You know, kid never sees me out. You know, my truck has some big wheels on it. I pull up, I'm just playing, vacuum my stuff out. Mr. Smalls, you listen to the music, and is that your truck? Listen, man, this shirt tied. I don't sleep in it. It's Saturday, you know. But they couldn't believe I was a human being. I mean, literally, the kids were like, "Oh my gosh, you watching your car and you're here?" Like, yeah. And you know, and I won't go into details of my whole life and all my mistakes, but to let the people know that I care about you, I'm a little bit human. Goes a long way, man.
Yeah. You want to be like, yo, I'm cool, man. Like, I'm really cool. Like, you just got to relax, yo. You got to relax.
Relax. Yeah.
Sometimes you got to check them, man. I had a student, like, snicker at me because I told him I had to cut the grass. He was like, yo, man, don't do that. Don't do that to me.
Hey, Drew, you want to be like, keep living, bro.
Yeah, all you gotta do is live long enough.
Yeah,
you never, dog.
You want to be able to cut grass one.
Yeah,
you want a house one day.
Come on.
So we kind of get into a little, you know, a sadder note, man. But what were some of the things that kind of went through your mind, you know, when you kind of first saw the stories and the videos about, you know, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery?
At first, it was, I would say, a little disbelief, a little disappointment. It's almost like I'm going through the grief process because I guess I'm disappointed because we keep seeing it year after year after year. And it was more of disappointment, disbelief every time. But I think with the Ahmad and Breonna, the latest, and George, just like you said, these latest ones, they were so close together that I feel like I'm leaving the disappointed feelings and I'm transitioning into rage. And that's not where I want to be, you know? Because I don't think rage is a good place for anybody to live. It's stressful and everything. But I am feeling a little bit of rage, just to be honest. And I don't want to have to start critiquing everybody's thoughts. Because when they were, like, I couldn't believe how many people were like, hey, they're innocent. Nothing needs to be done to the cops. Or even worse, you know, people was just talking about the protests and hearing people on TV not acknowledging after so many, this is a problem. And then when I look at Ahmad, he was just so young, you know, and all of them were bad. But, you know, that guy was so young. And I'm looking at, I work with young kids, you know, and that just added to it. And I'm transitioning to rage. And I think that, you know, I pray for myself because I really want our nation to really understand, like, what's affecting some is eventually going to affect us all. Because times have changed, you know. I can't be as silent as I probably would have been in 1970. I have a little bit more voice now and understanding the history and things that my uncles have went through, my dad has told me about, and then seeing some of that stuff still go on, it's kind of like, I'm getting rageful now. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way to sum it up. But I don't want to live in this place. I do believe in the good of people. I do believe in the good of our country. But it is tough right now, and I'm kind of in a rage place. And it just takes prayer and self-reflection to really keep myself in order, to be honest.
That's crazy. Might have been too long. Touched on, like, man, like, people are not going to just sit by anymore. Hey, well, I'm thinking about doing some research on this, man. Look about this across, like, college campuses, how many buildings and dorm names are being changed, right? And it ain't like came up like last weekend and we got to change the name. Like, he's been there for years. And so, yeah. And see, and that's all coming from, really, that's from the student body. And it's like, I've been telling people, I was like, hey, man, these students just ain't about to just sit. You got to have, like you said, you better explain this in detail, and something's got to be in it for them. And so I feel like that's the same thing. Like, man, and I know in Raleigh, man, they're having these protests, and it's like they're just not just going away. Like, they just, so it's answers.
Well,
they need answers.
Seattle, 6 days, 106 days in a row of protests in Seattle. And I'm going to say, you know, these cell phones, everybody hates the cell phone. I love the cell phone. I have the sum of all the world knowledge in my hand. You know, when I was in high school and I'm listening and Ice Cube had that song, Get the Camera. I don't know if y'all heard that song, Get the Camera. I heard it, but man, that police brutality stuff, that's just out in Compton, man. Right. They go crazy out there. Then LL Cool J dropped the line about his chain, and I'm like, I love LL. That's just in New York. Finish rapping about the girls. You know, because I didn't have a cell phone. You had to look up in encyclopedias. I don't know if y'all, but I had, like, the whole Britannica books.
Yeah.
You know? And I didn't want to go through reading all the history stuff. So now you jump now where I got a cell phone. You can tell me something, but I can look it up, and I can go straight to the primary source. I can go straight to the Constitution, the living document. I can pull up museums. And that's what I do. You know, I don't just go by what people say. Let me go to the primary source. You know, I can read what this man literally said in a letter to so-and-so.
Right.
And I have that. It's actually giving me more knowledge. Now, I don't want to get trapped in an echo chamber where I'm only looking up, you know, stuff that's going to make me enraged, of course. But that's, you know, but having that knowledge so readily, it's let me see things more clearly too. Like, you can't tell me things are changing where they should be, because now I can see at any given moment it's not. You know, like, I found out about the Aubrey murder before the news had the segment, just off of a person put it on IG, and I was like, is this real? They ran a guy down jogging. This right. might be fake. Then I found the article from Georgia. It was like, oh, God, this is legit, you know? So with that said, it's hard for me to hide my head in the grass, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can try to ignore some stuff, but it's hard because I have kids.
Right.
You know? And we need to do better. But like I said, I don't want to live there. I'm sorry I took too much time, but.
Nah. That's probably the most important question we're going to ask. And so, Drew, I know the buildings and the names on this building, you know, I know that's big down at UNC Chapel Hill and some other institutions. It's big at the institution I work at. And, you know, we have people protesting. The student athletes actually protested or marched across campus. I think down in Alabama, the student athletes did the same thing. But I also look at this like this, too, as far as building names. Like Drew said, they've been on there for hundreds of years. I mean, it's just what it is. But I look at it like this. And the whole, you know, monuments that we have all over the country and I'm like, yo, that's cool. Like, okay, let's say they changed the names or they took the statues down, they changed the names and they just called it the Rec Center or just didn't name it anything or named it after black people or whatever. But if the policies and the rules and the laws maintain the same, then what are we talking about? And my point is this, I'd rather us fight for laws and policies and things of that nature to change rather than statues, because I think we have to be careful. Now, I agree, they need to be taken down, need to be changed, but I feel like, you know, we gotta be careful because somebody might throwing us a bone, like these things that have just rapidly changed, all of us, like, you know, quickly, like we marched and things were changed. Like even with the Breonna Taylor thing, she got a settlement, I think $12 million, $22 million, whatever it is. They gave her a settlement, Louisville, the largest, whatever. They ain't arrested nobody. So, to me, that's a bone. Like, that's not even what – that's great. She should be straight. Their family should be straight. But we got to be careful that we don't get distracted with what really matters here. Like, we got to vote. We got to vote for November 3rd, November 4th, whatever it is. I think it's November 3rd. Whatever it is, we got to get out there and vote, and we got to put our fight and our togetherness towards not just the visual, but what's underneath and what's been underneath for so long.
And I agree 100%. You know, East Carolina, the dorm that I was in was ACOC, and he was a Confederate guy and donated a bunch of land to ECU, you know? And people wanted to tear that down, and I agree with you. You know, a Pope, when it comes to monuments, my whole thing is just focus on the monuments that were put up, you know, 1963, 1961, you know. Those were put up to spite a group of people, you know. But ACOC Hall on East Carolina was back in, like, 1910. Now, granted, that was before the movements and stuff, but I'm a little bit more comfortable with that. My issue was hundreds of monuments that were put up in the 60s and 70s and as late as the 80s, because those were meant strictly for one purpose and one purpose only. Screw a group. Let's take those down, get off these bones, and go get the rest of this policies done, you know? But, you know, it's low-hanging fruit in for equality. Statues are low-hanging fruit.
Right. I mean, you know, it's just amazing how quickly things have changed and these companies are putting out statements and everybody just, as soon as you be like, yo, that's all it took. You could have been changed all of that. Like, we had to tear a whole city up or we had to march for so long. But I understand that when things are hot, you got to strike while the iron is hot. I get it. And, you know, these companies are trying to save face and be about the people. And I appreciate that. But, you know, we got so.
But you know what?
You say what?
The movement, the movement is a lot more diverse now, too, though.
Oh, we got that popping in the group chat. You already know. Yeah. But that's why things are moving quicker, though.
Correct.
Hey, low key, I'm going to say this. We need it to be diverse.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
You know what I mean? If it's just us, if it's just us, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. So it's a beautiful. You said what?
We're all Americans. We all got to love each other. It should be diverse.
It should be diverse, but it don't have to be. And to Drew's point earlier, these young people, because of these phones and the knowledge they get and the feelings they already have, once young people get attached to something, I will give this young generation, Gen Z, some credit. Once they get attached to something, they might just be doing it for the love, you know, to be on date, some of them. But some of them are really intentional and are like, nah, I'll die for this right now. I'm 20. I'll die for this right today because they ain't got kids. They ain't got, you know, we got kids. We got wives. And we know history, the younger, every movement was started by the younger generation. And me and you talk, Smalls, our day, our time, what we got to do is support them, whatever that looks like.
Amen. Amen on that.
All right. So let's get back to, We went about 30 minutes. That's okay. That's love. That's what we got to do. Hey, so you already kind of talked about this, but what are some of the challenges you see high school students facing because of COVID? And, you know, it hit in March. I think, yeah, you just shared with me the other day, y'all won the state championship. Congratulations on that because y'all weren't able to play the championship game though, right?
Yeah, we were co-champions because we could never get it in. We kept postponing it, and then we got a point in June. You know, end of June came, we're not going to be able to play this game. Let's make co-champion.
Okay, and shout out to the E.E. Smith varsity girls basketball team. You just got your ring. You got your ring on?
No, I don't have it on. I should have, man.
That's all right. That's all right, but how has it affected the students, even in spring when that happened, and how do you see it affecting the student athletes now?
Man, it's a big loss, man. It's a big loss. You know, I couldn't imagine not being able to play sports my senior year, basketball, you know, because of COVID. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is be honest, because it's such an outlet and it's something that you're passionate about and you love it, you know? Mm-hmm. These kids don't have to play sports. You know, they can be like the average kid, go to school 3:30, go home. You know, instead, they're coming to practice, they're working hard, and they're going home doing their homework to maintain their eligibility status. Mm-hmm. So they're putting in that work, and to have it taken from them is sad. But, you know, our job is just ease this as much as we can, just make things as comfortable for them. Let's go ahead, eradicate this disease, just wear our masks, just do the things we can so we can come back and give these kids some kind of season, you know? Because they need it, they want it. And it causes, it's a mental health relief for some kids. You know, I was on a national athletic director call last week, and a kid, I want to say in Georgia, don't quote me exactly, you know, he runs cross country and stuff and couldn't get it in his senior year. And that was like a tipping point for him, according to the family. And he committed suicide.
Oh, you know, come on, man.
Yeah. So it, of course, not playing sports wasn't the only thing. However, not having that outlet, maybe if he was running, maybe he would have said something to his coach. Hey, you know, Coach Drew, I'm not feeling myself. I'm not feeling, you know, like the old me. And maybe Coach Drew talks to him and finds out, hey, look, I need to call your mom, and they got him in the hospital. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We don't know. So sports is very important. It's different for every kid. But our main thing is to try to get them back. And if you can't get them back, like I talk to coaches, the important thing is let kids know you love them. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that angers me the most is when I talk to a coach, man, I ain't talked to such and such in 2 weeks. Why not? So I made it to where all the coaches got to talk to their kids every week. That's the least you could do. Because I hope you don't care for them just so they can dribble and shoot for you. Mm-hmm. Because that would mess with the kids' mental health, too. You see what I'm saying? They need to know we love them even though we're not going to play right now. Mm. And if we can't play in the future, I still love you. Yeah. You know? That's
that in a nutshell. With everything virtual, man, you can lose contact with people like that. And it's just...
Wait,
got to make it like really intentional. Like, okay, every week, every Tuesday, this, I'm talking to you, every Wednesday, talking to this guy, every Thursday, just because, man. One week can turn into like.
But you know, yeah. Correct. It'll turn it quick. But you know, I think, but like I try to tell you, if you make it intentional, you can have a Zoom meeting with all 25 guys and just shoot the brain. Or do a schedule.
Yeah. Man, I do with my students every throughout the week, every Tuesday, we're going to have at 10 a.m. talking, Wednesday. And it's like, mm-hmm. to talk about, but it's just like, hey, man, I just need to see you. Like, just to put an eye. Exactly. Because, man, like I said, that 1 week to a month goes like that. And you know,
yes, it does. Yes.
Yeah, that mental health is tough too, man. And that's something I know our university is focusing on now because, you know, like you say, Smo, I can't imagine not hooping, especially your senior year, trying to go out with a bang. But then you just think about too, man, how much – you know, we all play sports, so you know how it is when you get around your group of guys, your guys. And you know how tight we were in high school, mm-hmm. malls, where we had we were going to Burger King before the games. We was going back to my crib after the game to kick it. Mm-hmm. And we just be in the hall chilling, and you don't realize it, but if you take that away from a 17, 18-year-old, that routine or just that love, just that release of cracking jokes in the lunchroom or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. And like we talked about earlier, the home environment ain't like that, ain't you know, the greatest space. Man, I mean, mm-hmm. it's crazy. And I'm sorry to hear about that suicide kid. That's tough, man.
Yeah.
But it's real.
It's real. There's kids who probably just can't come to school doing it. But, you know, I always address that mental aspect. So I'm going to be honest, you know, I remember the other times more so than I remember specific games. I mean, there's certain games I remember, you know, we did X, Y, Z, or I did this, right. You know. But for the most part, most of the things that make me smile was the stuff we did before games or after games. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that's what I'm still holding on to more so than just the actual playing, believe it or not.
Yeah, like the bus rides, you know. We could go on and on. All of that was, I mean, that's why we tight to this day. We really don't ever talk about sports. You know, we talk about, we talk about we used to go to Burger King.
Yep.
But yeah.
Can you kind of talk about your mentors who kind of poured into you and what's been like the best piece of advice that you received?
Ooh, man, I had a lot. Of course, my father, but let me not harp on him too much. But education-wise, Dr. Ellis, he gave me some great advice. He was like, you never have to get loud. Never got to get ugly. You got the keys. And when he told me that, it just really stuck with me, you know. Because you deal with irate teachers sometimes. I deal with irate kids. You know, a kid will cuss me out and then turn around and need a hug next period or the next day, you know. But he said, you never get loud, and I don't, because at the end of the day, I'm in charge, but I'm going to do what's best for you. So that was some great advice, and I try to hold on to that. I have some another advice that's kind of funny. A guy was like, I was a mentor of mine, John. I was telling him about these teachers didn't want to do X, Y, Z according to board policy. And he was like, why are you having another meeting? He was one of my executive coaches. And I was like, man, I got to get this right. Like, I don't know why they're not listening. He was like, just let them talk and then tell them what to do. You just go up in the meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Board policy is sending out an email. So that was a little bit more of an abrasive kind of way to deal with things. I keep that in my back pocket. But the best advice I probably got was from Dr. Peters. She was a superintendent in Moore County for a little bit, and Guilford, assistant superintendent. And she told me, never multitask people, only things. Mm. And I really took that to heart, and I really try to live by that. And basically what she meant by that is, you know, I may be doing a report, there's always something I'm trying to do. But when a teacher or a student comes into my office, I literally try to turn away. Like, the way I have my office set up, the computer is away from the door. So that way, if I'm talking to you where your seat is, I literally have to turn away from that computer. to let you know I care, and then I'm listening. Now, there's times where some people may want to talk to me for 30 minutes, and I literally say it. Hey, look, Jew, I don't want to multitask you. What you have is important. I just want to get this such and such turned in real quick. Can I see you during lunch? You know what I mean? But it makes a world of a difference building with the relationship. And I think multitasking things and not people has really helped me even in my marriage, you know? Because, you know, my wife or kids could be talking to me, and I still want to finish this text or do so. But literally, I got to put it down and say, what you want, baby girl? Or to my wife, whatever, you know. So that's the best advice I probably received, man.
That's good, man. So now that you in this position, back at our alma mater, and you're in a position to maybe help somebody, you know, that might be interested in taking your same path, what advice would you give them?
The best thing I tell people is, first thing is run your own race. You know, I ran track, and I don't know if you didn't run track, Drew. Did you run track, Drew?
We just hoop, man. Hey, we just hoop, man. We don't do all that other stuff.
I got you. Well, my whole thing is I tell people, and I tell teachers I mentor and help get jobs like mine, run your own race, you know. And when you're in track and you're running the 400, you look to that man to the left or right of you, it's going to get you. You got to focus on your breathing, your stride, and you will win. You know, you start looking to the side, compare where you were at or something, you're going to get walked down or you're going to lose. And I always tell people, run your own race. Just because someone got something done at 30 or 28 and you're 49, all that don't matter. Run your own race. And that way you're really prepared when the opportunity comes. Because the worst thing you could do is force something, especially dealing with kids and you're dealing with people, and you're not ready.
Yeah.
Because people's lives are affected by it. That's just how I feel. So run your own race is my advice I always give to anybody. And then the other advice that I live by is treat other people how they need to be treated.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people hear that golden rule, treat others how you want to be treated. How I want to be treated may not work for what you need. That's not good. To me, that's not the best leadership. I need to treat you how you need to be treated so you can succeed. Mm. You know, because I'm the type of guy, if you tell me something, you can just tell me one time. I'll get it done. I don't need you to yell. I don't need anything. I just need, hey, Smalls, we're going to do this Zoom at such and such. I'm going to send you the questions. Read it. Be ready.
Right.
I might do that to the next man, and they forget me. I got to give them four reminders.
Mm-hmm.
But should I say, hey, look, if I can do it with just one, you should be able to do it too? Not necessarily the case.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I'm big on treat others how they need to be treated, you know? And that's probably the best advice I can give somebody. Yep.
That's good.
Oh, and look out for yourself.
Take care of number one, ain't it? Hey, real quick, who's the best player in the NBA right now? Go quick.
LeBron James.
All right. Just checking your pulse over there. No, that's who I got. I'm just checking your pulse. I ain't know if we had to spend another 30 minutes going in this. Drew, don't say nothing crazy, Drew.
Man, come on, man. I've been a LeBron fan since St. Vincent, man.
Hey, well, look, I got something for you, and I want to get your advice. Because, Julian, you went to school. I'm looking at naming the basketball court at Pine Forest.
After me?
I was thinking about Smalls Court, but maybe I could do Kevin Smalls Court since we play at the same time and you have their name. What you think, man?
Hey, like you say, you in charge. Do what you got to do.
It's your barbecue, man. It smells good.
Smells good, dog. Hey, man. Hey, just let me know when COVID settled down, man. You know, I think like we talked about, getting all the alumni guys there. And, doing something special and, you know, giving back how we can. I think that's going to be real dope, man. We got to support you, dog, because.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. We got to support you. We know how crazy that is.
Drew, you come down and hang out with us, man.
You know, I get a little hall pass every now and then, man.
Yeah. Make sure we you that hall pass for that day, man. Come hang out with us.
Yeah, we got them. Hey, Smalls, we appreciate you, man, being on the show. You know, we wish you well. I know y'all gonna start going back to class soon, so your students will be back in the building right by the end of the month. Next week, is it next week?
Well, they just had a board meeting. We might extend it out through December.
Okay. Well,
so yeah, we're figuring it out.
Okay. Well, whatever it is, man, keep doing your thing. Take care of yourself. Be safe out here, dog. And I'm sure we'll be in the group chat here in a minute.
Yeah.
But
well, look, y'all be easy, man. I appreciate it.
For sure, man. Take care.
All righty.
All right.
Go.